Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today is episode number 112 with Matthew Caldwell.
No matter what job you're doing and no matter where you're going, you always want to be the best at like your current role. I mean, I never, ever imagined that I'd be in sports, let alone, you know, the president of a hockey team. I mean, ever, you know, and I never imagined that I'd even be at Goldman Sachs, you know, when I was working on Wall Street. You know, it's like I told you before, like when I was in the Army, I just worked really hard. And then I identified that my next step was going to be getting into, you know, the best grad school. And then I just focused on that, you know, and you know, you have to have this balance of like short-term and long-term planning.
Well, today's story, I think, is all about hustle. Matthew's a really down-to-earth guy, and you're going to hear about his journey from the Army after 5 years to eventually being at, first doing an MBA and JD degree at Northwestern University, then going on to Goldman Sachs, one of the toughest institutions to get into in the world of finance and in the world in general, and then how he worked his way to become chief operating officer and then president and CEO of the Florida Panthers. Matthew is great because he talks about just the hustle he showed, just not really knowing where he's going to go, but just taking risks, reaching out to people. And he's got a crazy story of how he ended up at Goldman, and it's an easy to replicate story for any veteran to follow. Same thing, he talks about the world of sports and how just putting his head down and doing his best job led to him ultimately becoming the president and CEO of the Florida Panthers, which I think is a career path of sports in general that could be very appealing for a lot of listeners. As always, at beyonduniform.io, you'll find show notes with links to everything we discuss. Matt talks about a lot of great books, Good to Great, Simon Sinek's books, a couple others. Just as a reminder, if you go to beyonduniform.io/books, you'll find a free offer from Audible that not only gets you a free audiobook of your choice, but it also rewards Beyond the Uniform with a little bit of money to offset the cost of this show. One last plug, if you like the show, if you could please give us a good rating on iTunes, it helps get the word out about what I'm doing. And as always, if you know of other veterans who would benefit from this, please send it their way. So with that, let's dive into my interview with Matt Caldwell. Well, joining me today in Florida at the Panther Stadium is Matthew Caldwell. Matt, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate the time here and you reaching out to me.
Well, I wanted to share with listeners just a quick snippet about your background. Matt is the president and CEO of the Florida Panthers and Sunrise Sports and Entertainment. He started out at West Point, after which he served in the Army for 5 years, conducting combat operations in Iraq and peacekeeping operations in Kosovo. Matthew worked as a vice president at Goldman Sachs in their investment management division and then transitioned to be the chief operating officer for the Panthers before being elevated to president and CEO. He holds a JD and MBA from Northwestern University School of Law and the Kellogg School of Management. So Matt, maybe to start off, anything to add to or amend to that background?
No, I think you got it. All straight. I appreciate you looking all that up and stuff. And it seems like it's been, when you sit here and read through it, or listen to you read through it, you're like, wow, bunch of things. Am I that old already? But it's all good stuff.
Yeah. Well, maybe to start off, I always love to ask about, you know, take us back to that moment you knew you were going to leave the Army and how you approached that decision.
Yeah, you know, It was definitely the toughest decision I've ever had, especially, you know, professionally. For me, you know, it wasn't easy. I went back and forth on it a bunch of times. I was in the Army for five years. That was my commitment for West Point. And the first three of those 5 years, I was more or less deployed, either in Iraq or Kosovo or, doing a whole build up training exercises for that. So it was like very, very high tempo. And, you know, ironically, when I was doing all that and when I was deployed, sometimes people, they get deployed a lot and it forces them to say, hey, I want to consider something outside the Army. But I actually really, really enjoyed it and loved it and felt like I was really making a difference and felt that, I was serving a higher purpose, and it was real. I really kind of liked the high intensity. And then when I got back from the deployments, I was stabilized for a year, and I was more in like the garrison, you know, lifestyle at my army base in Germany. And I just started thinking, and I probably went back and forth on everything for about a year. And, you know, what I said to myself was, I really enjoyed the Army most during deployments, but, you know, that's not, you're not doing that all the time, you know? And then at the same time, I didn't know if I wanted, I didn't think that I wanted to maybe go special ops or wherever else to have that high in tempo for a whole career. Cause I didn't know if that was sustainable, you know, for a family and what I wanted for long term. So, you know, I went back and forth on it and, you know, ultimately decided that I wanted some other things outside the Army. And, you know, for me personally, in my view, I didn't feel that I can deploy every single year while at the same time, that was what I enjoyed the most, you know, so I wasn't a big fan of always going out to training and a lot of the garrison life. So I said, you know, I want to pursue some other things. And, you know, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I did want, you know, reached a stage in my career where I thought graduate school was a natural next step for me. And I figured, you know what, I'll get out, go, you know, pursue that option and then kind of seek different, you know, careers from there.
And how did you choose to go to a JD and MBA program? And what advice do you have for vets considering going that route?
So I was really interested in business school. It was just something that, just growing up, I'd always read the Wall Street Journal. I'd always be interested in the stock market. And, you know, outside the Army, I just, I liked hearing what companies were doing. And I read some business books like A Good to Great. I remember reading that one specifically and by Jim Collins, and was always intrigued by companies. So I thought an MBA was very suitable, and it can open me up to learn about all the different industries. And then, you know, the legal aspect came into play probably more because when I started researching schools, Northwestern was one of my top picks. I love the Chicago market and love the culture that I learned about with Kellogg. And, you know, really just from doing research, I realized that they had this very integrated, you know, very, very, you know, kind of integrated, but also, you know, very exciting JD MBA program. And it was in 3 years. I thought that I'd be able to get a taste of both business and law. So my view is I applied to a bunch of business schools, and then, you know, with Northwestern, I thought if I can also get a law degree, it could, you know, make me that better of a business person, or, you know, maybe I'll like something like corporate law and practice for a few years first. So just thought it, you know, opened me up a lot of opportunities. I mean, it's a big commitment. Most programs are around 4 years, a lot of money for sure. But for me, I just thought that was a good fit. For advice I'd give other veterans, I mean, it really did work out for myself. Like I look back on it, you know, I had all this leadership experience. I had lived overseas my whole 5 years in the Army. So I felt that I had a pretty good worldview at that point after doing more of a combat mission, more of a peacekeeper operation, training in Germany, did a lot of exercises in Eastern Europe. So I had a pretty good view of what was out there. And, you know, for me to come home, I didn't, as much as I maybe had an interest in business and can read about it, I really had no idea if I wanted to be a consultant, if I wanted to be a lawyer, if I wanted to go into finance. I was kind of all over the map. So I thought it was just like a good, you know, for me it was 3 years, but, you know, most business schools, 2 year reset. And then, you know, the network you meet, I think, is probably the most important aspect, because, you know, a lot of your friends, you know, if you go to West Point for 4 years or any college, and then we're an RTC program, and then, you know, 5 years in the Army, you're talking 9 years of your life at that point, you know, over a third of your life at that point, that you're with a certain segment of people, right? The military, which is a great segment of people, but it's still a little bit of a secluded world. So to come out, go to a school, meet people from many different universities, all walks of life, different backgrounds, hear about what they did, you know, because a lot of the students you meet, they've already worked in the workforce for a number of years before going to grad school. That experience was very eye-opening to me. You know, not only did I make friends, but I learned what these people did. And I and they were some of the best resources, in addition to, you know, the teachers and all the companies that come on campus. So to me, it worked out really, really well. It was like the perfect, like, kind of transition pivot point for me. You know, others, a lot of my classmates decided to go work first and get a couple of years experience, you know, in the civilian world, in the business world before going to grad school. I can definitely see the value of doing that. I do know that there were times where I was in class and people were walking through a case study or talking through a certain example, and I really had no context of what they were talking about. So I can see if you worked at a company for a year first, you can say, oh yeah, I remember when we had that problem. I remember how we tackled that, you know, that obstacle. So, you know, I can see the, you know, each side, but for me, it was a perfect way to transition from the Army to the business world.
And so, you know, going into a JD MBA program, not having a clear idea of what you wanted to do, what led you ultimately to the world of finance and Goldman Sachs in particular?
Yeah, so, you know, for me, I think most people in business school, they go to all those like networking events and they, you know, they take a bunch of classes, they go to the event, they talk to a bunch of people, and then they kind of, you know, I would say like build from like the bottom up. They say, okay, I want to be, I think this is, I want to be in private equity. Right. And then, you know, what part I want to be, I want to do, you know, let's say it's, I guess kind of like the M&A world and private equity. And they kind of identify an industry and then they start interviewing companies in certain geographic spots and stuff. For me, I went to all those events and I looked at it as, you know, what I knew I wanted to go to the business. I enjoyed a lot of the classes and stuff more. And then for me, it was like, you know, what company do I want to be most associated with? So I kind of started with the company first. And after talking, I mean, I did a pretty exhaustive search and I spoke with like the McKinsey's and the Boston Consulting Groups and a lot of the consulting companies and general management, like General Electric and some other, you know, Procter and Gamble and all them. But I felt like I really connected with a lot of the banks and I liked, you know, JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs. They're all great, great firms. And, you know, ultimately it's a people business, right? A lot of times wherever you go, and I just resonated with the people at Goldman. They were very diverse, very hardworking, very, you know, very ambitious, you know, so I wanted to be in a challenging environment like that. And then once I started researching the firm, there was kind of three general areas, that were most jobs fell in. One was the trading side of the house, you know, and I enjoyed that kind of trading floor mentality. But I didn't know if it would be great for me long-term. The investment banking house, where you're working on a lot of big deals with, you know, major institutions, also sounded, you know, interesting. But ultimately the investment management division is where I just thought was a good balance between, you know, working with big institutions, giving them advice on how to invest their capital, and then also something that I thought would like resonate with me long term. So, and it was actually a couple of West Point guys that were in the division that mentored me, and you know. So anyway, it was a little bit of a long route, but I felt, you know, I thought I'd be really proud to be at a firm like Goldman, and then I just tried to see what was the best fit, you know, for me, and I felt the investment management division was a good blend of like, you know, giving investment advice, but also leveraging my interpersonal skills and, you know, dealing with high net worth clients and, you know, big institutions. I can kind of leverage my, you know, client relationship building approach with them. So it was a little bit of a long route, but that's how it all kind of came about.
And for a lot of people on active duty listening, you know, Goldman Sachs has the reputation in the finance world of being just the elite, you know, one of the best companies you could possibly work for. It's such a great name to have on your resume, and they're known for incredible training and for just the signal that it provides to other people that they would hire you is such a great sign. And I'm wondering, you know, for someone on active duty, how would you explain the day-to-day work that you did while you were at Goldman?
Yes, so I appreciate those kind words. Thank you. And it is a great firm. You know, I don't know exactly how they've done it, but it's obviously been over many, many generations and producing, you know, great people that have done great things for the country, both on Wall Street and in government and elsewhere. But for my everyday life there, it was, you know, I worked on a team of about six individuals. We managed 30 or so accounts. Each account could be some big families, could be a foundation, endowment, nonprofit, another company's assets. And we would kind of be the intermediary between the client. We'd listen to the client, hear what their needs are, see what they're trying to do for their particular family or foundation, how they're trying to grow their capital, and then sit down with, you know, all the experts at the firm, whether it was someone in research, whether it was someone that, you know, knew everything about investing, you know, in Europe or Latin America or, you know, staying domestically in the U.S., you know, capital markets. And, you know, we'd kind of be the intermediary between the client and then all the different resources at Goldman. So a lot of my job was like listening to the client, hearing what they wanted, try to solve a problem for them. You know, Goldman's a huge resource base, so I spent a lot of time running around talking to the different departments, and then making a recommendation to the client. We were essentially, you know, investment advisors to the clients on how to best, you know, invest their capital.
That's a great description, and I think it's I can imagine how that leveraged a lot of your experience in the military of just being able to move in a high pace environment, learn quickly, communicate, empathize. I just imagine it leveraged a lot of your background fairly well.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. It's like, you know, if you're deployed to Iraq and you're in, you know, right before you know it, you find yourself in some city, you know, that you can't even pronounce the name, and you're talking to like a local sheikh or town mayor, policeman. They're explaining, you know, through an interpreter, the problem that they have. You know, they have trouble with, you know, IEDs in their area, you know, little kids being harmed, you know, by folks that are coming in and planting bombs. So how do we solve that problem, right? And usually you don't know the answer right off the top of your head, but you listen. You take a genuine interest, you're very empathetic, right? And then you go back and try to leverage the resources you have with the team and how many patrols you can do, how can you scout out the area, how can you talk to other locals about how these insurgents or whatever you want to call them are being able to plant these IEDs. And, you know, you just do as much investigation as possible and then go back with, come back with a plan. So obviously very drastically different circumstances, but I can assure you that my ability to have an open mind and communicate and listen, you know, and not have, you normally don't have an answer on hand, right? Because most problems are all different from each other. And then as you get more experience, you start seeing all similarities on how to tackle different things. And you start to see a couple of common threads, but it usually takes you a while to get to that point.
And how long were you at Goldman? Actually, let me back up. So, Goldman has such an incredible reputation. I'm wondering what advice you have for veterans who are aspiring to work there or at another, you know, well-known company within the finance industry.
Well, yeah, the banks, especially, you know, or any types of firms that are on Wall Street, they generally really like military. You know, they appreciate the tenacity, the hard work, the camaraderie, the just innate kind of characteristic of all and many servicemen and women, that you just put the company and the organization is first, right? The Army really, the military in general really instills that in you, that, you know, the company is more important than the individual. And that's not common everywhere, you know? So a place like Goldman really, really values that. It is a tough firm to get into. So traditionally they only hire like right out of college or right out of an MBA or other graduate programs. They just value talent and intelligence and, very diverse backgrounds. So whether you went to law school, med school, or any other, you know, graduate degree, I'm just naming a few. If you have a, you know, interesting story and they think that you can, you know, add a lot of value at the firm, they know they can teach you all the finance, you know, techniques and stuff. So, the firm loves veterans. I think it's just a matter of, you know, hustling and getting in front of the right people. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I've gone through a job search a couple of times now, and, you know, it's just a matter of like reading a lot and talking to a lot of people, you know, and sometimes, you know, you do all this research and then you set up a bunch of calls or coffee chats or lunches and you get through like 20 of them and you don't think you're making like any progress. You know, you're saying to yourself, oh God, you know, it's like a broken record here. I'm saying the same thing, tell my story over and over. And then you go to the 21st meeting and it's like the, you know, the perfect meeting, right? But if you didn't go through all those reps beforehand, if you didn't try to vet all these things out, you just never know how it's going to come about. So, I mean, I remember vividly one time I was going to school in Chicago, but I was interested in working in New York and, you know, a bank had invited me out for an interview and I tried to set up some other ones, but I didn't get, I wasn't able to work out a time. So I went to the one interview and I literally just sat like at a Starbucks for like a whole day, you know, emailing and calling a bunch of other firms that I've been in touch with. And I just, since I was physically in Manhattan, I just figured, you know, from here, you know, if someone says, hey, swing by, like I'm right there. I don't have to jump on a plane. I don't have to go back to my hotel. I don't have to try to worry about logistics. And that wound up getting me in touch with, you know, someone that was at, I think it was Credit Suisse at the time, was a West Point person, went and met with that guy. He had a few minutes, you know, available. I sat down with him. He took a liking to me. I was open and honest with him that I, you know, Goldman was my first choice. You know, he appreciated that. So he introduced me to another West Pointer at Goldman. And then that was kind of like my way into the firm. And then before I know it, you know, 30 interviews later, I was able to get a job there. So, you know, you can go to all the best schools and go to all the best training and all that, but nothing is better than a little grit and hustle. You know, I can assure you that.
That's so awesome. What a great story, man. I just love that thought of instead of just taking in the sights, you're just sitting in that Starbucks, pounding some coffee and making some phone calls and it pays off.
That's exactly what I did. It's that basic. Yeah. And I had been in touch with some of these people beforehand, so I was responding to some emails prior and, you know, I just felt if I was physically around, I could be much more mobile and, you know, and versatile. So,
I love too what you said too about the, you know, like those reps that you're doing before, they pay off. And I love that quote, the harder I work, the luckier I am. It's like all of the talks that you did before, all the emails you sent before, it's just training you for that time when it really matters. So it's not like you can just fire off one email and that's going to work. It was, you know, 100 different calls, 20 different emails, whatever it was to actually get that one.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And the biggest problem is while you're going through the process, you don't feel like you're making any progress, right? So if you have 20, 30, whatever the number is, meetings, and they all feel the same, like cookie cutter and, oh, God, I should have said this. I mean, you have all these mental, you know, dilemmas and struggles. You go back and forth in your head. And then before you know it, boom, you just one happens that you really hit it off with someone. And then they open the door to something. It's like a maze, right? Like you figure out a way to get through one door and then you gotta get through another one. And you just gotta keep at it. And it's very, very rare. I would even say more than it's almost next to impossible that like, you know, you just float a resume out there and, you know, there's a job waiting for you. You know, it just doesn't work that way. And, you know, employers too want to see how much you want the job, you know, and how much you're going to work hard. The veteran community is very, very small. There's no doubt about it, but there's also a lot of veterans still out there that, you know, how do you differentiate yourself and, you know, and then also from other folks that have been in the business world. So.
And so what led you to the Florida Panthers? How did that come about?
So while I was at Goldman, one of the unique aspects of their culture is more the junior folks, so people either right out of college or right out of graduate school, they're the ones that are encouraged to get out there and try to kick up new business, at least in the group that I worked in. Typically in firms, they have more senior partners, managing directors that are trying to like drive, new client relationships. But at Goldman, they send out some of their, you know, more junior, younger folks. So for me, you know, I'm out there trying to talk to, you know, institutions and big family offices to get them to invest with Goldman. Goldman concentrates on the upper echelon, of wealth levels, and also bigger endowments and other organizations they work with. So I was out there, hustling, trying to the same thing I did that I just told you about was getting a job, and built a relationship with a very successful West Point graduate by the name of Vincent Viola. And over time, Vinny and I, he goes by Vinny, we got close, and he wound up becoming a client at Goldman, and wound up being a great relationship, both with investing, some of his capital, and then also, he had some existing relationships with investment bankers that would help him, with his company and other things, with maybe doing an IPO or doing a credit facility. So we built this great rapport with him over time, and he took a liking to me as a younger West Pointer that had gotten a career on Wall Street, and it was very similar to his background. He went to the academy, served in the military. He got out, started started trading on Wall Street in the New York Mercantile Exchange, and he. He came from Brooklyn. I'm from Staten Island. You never know the connections you'll have, with people. So over time, after a few years, he had asked me to come and join what's called his family office. So some of these folks have an actual company that helps manage their money. So I jumped at the opportunity. And as much as I loved Goldman and I had planned to be there for many years, I just thought it was something I couldn't pass up. Even I remember dreading, I was walking in to talk to the partner at Goldman that had hired me, and I was dreading it because I felt so loyal to him for giving me my first job and having faith in me. And I probably got about 10 seconds into, my pitch about this opportunity. And he said, I would love to have built a career here, but you got to go jump on that. Like, this is like a once in a lifetime opportunity. So I went for it and had, I started working directly for Vinny, in his family office. And when that happened, he had purchased the Florida Panthers hockey team. And this was in 2013. And, he'd always looked to get into sports, and he felt this was a great opportunity. It was, it's hockey in South Florida, so which is always tough selling a, more northern Canadian sport, and more in non-traditional markets. We knew there was going to be a big challenge. And he sat down with me and said, listen, I'm a very hands-on operator and investor, and I can use someone that I can trust and, can be someone on the ground. So I said, yeah, you don't have to tell me twice. So I signed up for it, and I moved down to South Florida. I live in Miami, and the arena is up in kind of by Fort Lauderdale. And I started off just being kind of an ownership, like representative, on the ground, and giving him reports on how we can improve the franchise. And I focused more on the business side, like selling season tickets and selling sponsorships and trying to get the arena packed, trying to get people excited about the franchise. And they wound up giving me a permanent role there, which was the chief operating officer at first. And then about a year later, after the franchise started turning around and I built a little bit of a reputation in South Florida, he wound up naming me the president and CEO of the whole operation, which even saying it today is still still extremely humbling, gratifying to even say it. I'm very, very proud. And I definitely wouldn't be here without him. So I appreciate his faith in me and really excited about the opportunity.
That's such an incredible story. I mean, before you went down there, did you play hockey at West Point? Did you have any tie-ins, or were you kind of starting from scratch on this?
Well, no, I didn't play. I was always a fan. I played football and basketball in high school, and but I was always just a huge sports fan, and all the four major sports: football, baseball, basketball, and hockey. There's actually another West Point graduate. You can probably see a trend here that a lot of these West Pointers take care of each other, but they love all veterans. We have a ton of veterans that we've hired, at the company here. And there's another graduate, but he's actually my classmate. His name is Eric Joyce. He was an assistant captain for the West Point hockey team. So Eric knew Vinny through some other channels. So Eric was going to be his guy that helped out on like the pure hockey side, you know, and advising the general manager on, you know, players we should go after, how we should draft. And he's done a great job. And he's the assistant GM right now. And the GM is Dale Talon. And, you know, especially initially, I focused more on the business side, which, you know, you definitely have to know hockey, but at the same time, you know, it's you're more selling the team, you know, you're more keeping the budget straight. You're more, you know, sending reports to owners on, you know, our marketing plan, our sales plan, our, you know, how are we closing our books on time, kind of like everything that happens like off the ice and behind the scenes, how the arena is operating and how we can, you know, what kind of culture can we set with all of our employees, customer service, all those things. So while knowing the sport's important, I think like knowing how to run a business is probably more important. So, you know, over time I've gotten very sped up and I'm extremely close to Dale Talon, who's been awesome to me. And then, you know, I've gotten close with our coaching staff and scouts and everyone. But initially I was more on the business side.
What does your life look like? Like if you were describing to someone on active duty, maybe a typical day in your job, what sort of things do you do?
So right now, you know, there's definitely different periods where things change dramatically. So right now we're in the off season. So, you know, we're in the middle of August in South Florida. Hockey's not really front of mind for folks right now. July and August are two of the more dead months of the summer. However, especially for the business side of the operation, it's a very important time to knock out some long-term projects to get ready for a season. So a big thing we're doing right now is formalizing our marketing plan. So we're getting feedback from all the different departments, you know, in the operation, and trying to figure out like what's going to be our slogan this year. How are we going to attract more fans? How are we going to get a lot of, you know, a big excitement around opening night? Our opening night comes on October 7th. So we're doing a lot of kind of, you know, hitting the pause button and thinking about our identity, our team, our style of play, and how we tell that story, you know, to our fan base. Additionally, we're very active in what we call like grassroots, you know, marketing and being in the community. So it's very important down here when, you know, a lot of times sports is not front of mind, especially hockey is not front of mind, that we go door to door and we go to, you know, local Boys and Girls Club events and, you know, veteran events and, you know, anything else to support some of our corporate partners, nonprofits, and show a Panthers presence. Because the more you can become part of people's everyday lives, there's more of an emotional connection that develops between the local community and the team. So we do a lot of that in the summer because things are a little slower and quieter. Once we come back after Labor Day, you know, the whole coaching staff, the players, the whole hockey side comes back from the off season. Then it's all about supporting like our training camp, preseason games, you know, and then getting ready for, you know, regular season games, which are very, very intense. And our fan base comes out. We want to make sure they have a great experience while they're here. We're always working the arena, you know, visiting suites, visiting clubs, visiting people in their stands, you know, trying to show them a great, great experience while they're here. You know, additionally, you know, you mentioned, you know, I'm the president of the Panthers, but you also mentioned the Sunrise Sports Entertainment, but that's the entity that operates the building. So we have a ton of concerts that are at the building. We have John Mayer coming up soon. We got Bruno Mars here in like 2 months. So we have, you know, big acts that come through and we, you know, all the ushers, all the ticket takers, all the parking, all the people that run our food and beverage, all that is underneath our purview. So, you know, every time someone walks in this building, I want them to have an amazing experience. So it's very like customer oriented type of business. So you can imagine that, you know, today, where it's more of like a planning day and we're trying to, you know, set out our marketing slogan is a lot different than when we have Bruno Mars or playing the Rangers one night, you know, because that's much more, there's people in the building here, we're running around more, there's always a fire drill that pops up. So it definitely keeps things interesting, you know, and you have a, you know, a lot of different tempo at different types, different points of the year.
That's incredible. It sounds like such an incredible life where you've got so many different things going on and just incredible names and just it. I can see how a lot of the operations experience in the military helps, and I can see where your JD and MBA is put to use and your experience at Goldman. It just seems like such a great fit for all the experiences you accumulated over time. And I'm wondering, you know, what advice you have for maybe someone who's on active duty right now and is, you know, wanting to have a career in the sports industry, of how to go about that.
Yeah, so that's you know, it's I don't know if it differs much from other industries and other you know, especially Wall Street and stuff. I mean, a lot of companies, they value how interested you are in, what are your talents, you know, your hard work. And, you know, if someone right now is leaving the military, let's say like the next 6 months, you have to start reaching out to sports teams or anyone you know that in your network that has some connection, you know. I mean, literally it starts from like you go on LinkedIn or Facebook and you're like, oh, wow, my buddy from high school, you know, works for this minor league team in Massachusetts. You give that person a call. All right, you start, how are your experiences? You start hearing things and you say, oh, wow, that sounds really interesting. You know, listen, I want to be in the New York area. Do you know anybody? And, oh, yeah, my friend works for the minor league affiliates in the New York Yankees. And then get introduced to him and or her. And, you know, you start having that conversation. And, you know, any industry, you know, will respect a veteran reaching out. So you don't have to, it's not like you have to prove like, hey, I know that my resume talks a lot about my infantry experience or my quartermaster experience in the military. And I know that's not sports. People aren't going to hire you because of your specific job in the military. They just want to know that you did a really good job at it and you have good reviews, you know, and you can talk intelligently about it, and you represent all the values of the military, and then they can always teach you the function of the job, you know. And, you know, on that note, like someone gave me this advice one time, like no matter what job you're doing and no matter where you're going, you always want to be the best at like your current role. You know, I think a lot of us fall into the mistake of like thinking ahead, like, okay, I'm only in this job for the next 6 months or next year, so I can like coast by right now. And then I'll, you know, I'm going to go into sports anyway. I'm going to go into finance. But, you know, the problem with that is you never know where your career is going to take you. And then also, you know, what you're doing currently is important for like recommendations, for when you just want to tell stories when you're in interviews and describe why you did such a good job at the current job that you're in. So it's really, really important to, I mean, I never, ever imagined that I'd be in sports, let alone, you know, the president of a hockey team. I mean, ever, you know, and I never imagined that I'd even be at Goldman Sachs, you know, when I was working on Wall Street. You know, it's like I told you before, like when I was in the Army, I just worked really hard. And then I identified that my next step was going to be getting into, you know, the best grad school. And then I just focused on that, you know. And you know, you have to have this balance of like short-term and long-term planning, you know. You know, for the short, when I went into Northwestern, I said, all right, I'm going to try to get the best grades possible. I'm going to research every different industry, do a great job there. And then before I know it, that led me to getting a job, you know, in New York in finance, you know. And then from there, I hustled and all the stuff I told you about before. And, you know, somehow that led me to Vinny, you know. And then I thought I'd be working on the investment side with Vinny, but then he winds up buying a hockey team. And you just never know how life takes you, you know. And it sounds very, very random, and it definitely sure is. But when you're always trying to be the best at what you're currently doing, things just happen to open up for you.
Ah, I love that. One of the guests I had on the show is Cal Newport, who wrote a book called So Good They Can't Ignore You. And a lot of the premise of his book and what he talked about in the interview was exactly what you said, is like the recipe is just doing the best job you possibly can, learning as much as you can wherever you're at. And I think it's tough at times. You start to think ahead, you start to try and position yourself, right, what you're going to do next. But I think that one of the things that's so appealing about your advice is the simplicity of just get, you know, put your head down and just crush whatever you're doing, knock it out of the park, and that leads to good things.
Yeah. No, you nailed it. You're exactly spot. You said it a lot more succinctly and clearly than I was. It's like I was bouncing around a lot. But I don't know. I just hearing like how do I say this? Like, I don't like read my resume or like read my, you know, but like in the beginning of the podcast when you were, you know, reading through like Northwestern and West Point, and those are all just like unbelievable things and buzzwords, and I'm extremely proud of them. But I don't think I'm anything special on like getting into those. I couldn't say that it was like some high IQ or some just unbelievable finance whiz or some the great sports operator. Every situation was new to me, and I just had to like roll up the sleeves and just try to figure it out. And was never the best, you know, when I first started doing it, but always tried hard to be the best. So. Mm.
And you mentioned towards the start of the interview, you mentioned the book Good to Great. I'm just wondering if there's any other resources, whether it's books or conferences or seminars or anything that you found really helpful in your civilian career that you'd want to pass on to other veterans.
That's a great question. You know, a guy that I most recently have really started, who has really caught on to me, and I thought has been really, really interesting, is this guy Simon Sinek. Do you know his name? Does that ring a bell?
That's so funny. One of the guests on the show, Joe Musselman, he heads up the Honor Foundation, and he just literally today sent an email where Simon Sinek's going to be presenting and speaking to their group. But yeah, his TED Talk is incredible, and his stuff is incredible.
Yeah, this just came across my, you know, desk, if you will, whatever you want to say, maybe about 6 months ago. And he's an incredible guy, and he's done so much research across many different industries. And I bring his name up because it's not like specific to technology or specific to Wall Street or specific to sports. You know, it's, you know, the TED Talk and then the book follow up that made him really famous is, it's called Start With Why. And it's all about how like great leaders inspire people to take action. And it's a simple kind of concept, but it's all about like understanding like why you exist, right? So whether you're working at Apple, you're working at Goldman, or you're in sports or whatever you're doing, you have to try to figure out, you know, the company itself has to figure out, you know, it's why, it's purpose. It's almost like it's vision for the future. And these are things that we kind of did in the military, but when you actually really start digging into it, it's actually hard to, you know, because, you know, all companies can say, oh, we exist to make a profit, but that's not really inspiring, you know. But a company like Apple, you know, they exist because they're always challenging the status quo, right? Like whether it's Microsoft or whether it's the music industry or whether it's, you know, the phone industry, really, look what it's done to the phone. So if that at their core is how they consistently challenge the status quo, no matter what industry they are in. And the book is fascinating because Apple's one case study, but this guy, I mean, he covers everything from Martin Luther King to sports teams to great companies. Like, he goes through Apple, Google. You know, it's really, really interesting. So he's someone I would definitely, you know, really get into. And then he also has another book called Leaders Eat Last, which I think people in the military can really, really appreciate. So those are like two more recent ones that I've gotten into. You know, my last couple of years, I've really gotten into sports books. So they're like most, you know, they're like kind of most front of mind for me. But sports organizations, you know, culture and how people operate day to day is so important to them. And there's so many correlations to other industries, but I read recently a book called The Real Madrid Way, which is on the Real Madrid soccer team, which is the most valuable sports franchise out there. And a guy, Steven Mandis, who happens to be a Goldman graduate too. He's a phenomenal guy. I've never met him in person, but after reading his book, I reached out to him, and he jumped on the phone with me and spent an hour of his precious time just telling me why Real Madrid was so valuable, and what they did in the community. And that's what's really pushed a lot of our grassroots efforts that I talked about. So like I said, some things never change. Sometimes you just give somebody a call and ask them, you know, why they wrote something or why they've been so successful. But those books have been really helpful recently.
This is great. Well, for listeners, I'll add in the show notes, I'll add a link to Simon Sinek's TED Talk, his books, and the Real Madrid book as well. I just appreciating your story, the hustle and energy and just kind of willingness to put yourself out there. And I just want to comment on, you know, it's always a risk. I think there's that part of, especially coming from the military, there's always that risk of putting yourself out, taking that risk, speaking on your behalf, asking for favors. I know that's come up in these interviews as something that's difficult for veterans. And I just admire your willingness to take those risks, take those chances, reach out to an author of a book you really like and end up talking on the phone with them for an hour. I think that's really incredible. I know we've only got a little bit of time left, so I always like to leave the last question for, you know, I've asked a lot of questions about what I think listeners would value, but I want to give you room just to share any other final words of wisdom you'd want to share with a veteran and active duty audience.
That's a great final question. And ironically, it also, as I think about my answer, it's tied to what you just most recently said about, you know, taking a risk and veterans and not wanting to put themselves out there. So quick little anecdote. When I was in graduate school at business school at Kellogg, I had the opportunity to sit with the student admissions team. On the student side, I actually participated, and then I, you know, got feedback from all the guidance counselors. So I heard, you know, sat in a room and heard admissions officer that was, you know, admitting people into Kellogg. And they said, listen, we see these resumes from veterans. We have absolutely no idea what it says, right? And as much as we try to dumb it down and not use acronyms and go to some Cameron Brooks or whoever to help us with our resume, it still sounds very foreign to people. So as much as we do that, we hand it to admissions counselor or anybody who's interviewing you. And, people they sit down for an interview and it's very difficult to pull information out of veterans because it's kind of like what I commented on before. Like, we're trained for however many years we're in the military to always put the organization first, right? And always, comment on the team and the unit and then that being more important. So we're trained not to self-promote. So it's a really tough thing to do. You got to thread that needle of promoting yourself and willing to call someone and explain why they should be taking your call, reach out on an email and explain why they should get on the phone with you. Because as a veteran, you're like, I don't want to ask for anything. I don't need any favors. I don't, someone should just, in the military, you usually just watch your performance and then you get a medal or a ribbon or, you know, accolades. You don't have to run around pounding your chest. Now, at the same time, you shouldn't be running around pounding your chest because then you'll come off as being too self-promotional. So it's this really difficult balance. And I would just encourage veterans, if you feel like you're self-promoting too much, you probably aren't, because it's not natural to you. So I'd push the envelope a little bit and get out there and take a risk and be a little more pushy. Because if you don't do it, you don't have big army looking out after you, you know? So, the army is a much more communal and family atmosphere that you have senior leaders looking out for you. Whereas you get in the business world, it's a little more capitalistic. You got to fight for yourself a little bit.
I think that's such great advice. And I definitely relate in my own experience and in all these interviews I've done that it is so unnatural to have to speak up for yourself and speak on behalf of yourself and advocate. And I love what you said, where it's like, even if you feel like you're self-promoting too much, you're probably not. You're just, your natural calibration is so far to one extreme that you're going to have to be out of your comfort zone for a while. And then after a while, you might need to rein it in because it is that fine balance. But I think that's great advice. And I think that you're a great example of someone who has found that balance and just really used a lot of hustle to get some of the toughest to obtain jobs in the world. So it's, I appreciate your advice today and also your example for the veteran community.
Perfect. Yeah, no problem. I'm honored to be on here. Things of the military has done wonders for me. I couldn't imagine all the things that have opened up for me and stuff. So any chance I could to give back and talk a little bit about experiences, I'd love to. So thanks for reaching out.
Surface.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. If you haven't given us a good review on iTunes, would greatly appreciate that. If you know of any way to get this in front of more veterans or people on active duty, would love to find a way to increase our exposure. And lastly, if you haven't taken advantage of that audible.com offer for a free audiobook of your choice, you get a free audiobook. Beyond the Uniform, get some money to help offset the cost of hosting and putting this show out, which costs about $70 a month. Would greatly appreciate that. I'll be back next week with more stories of military veterans about their civilian career.